Welcome to Nuanced Judaism, coming to you from OU Torah.
I'm Simi.
And I am Rivka.
Introspection. Thinking about why we do things and why we think certain things and our relationships with other people is the sort of thing that's on people's minds, at least hopefully, during the 3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, especially when it comes to Tisha B'Av, which is the destruction of the temple, we think about how we can improve our relationships to others. Because one of the reasons that the temple was destroyed because of hate between people.
So yeah, it's always the idea of fasting in isolation is never a Jewish thing. It's what it leads you, actually maybe Yom Kippur, but in general, it's what it leads you to do. It forces you to introspect. Now,
it's the ultimate outside-in symbolism. I'm fasting, I'm feeling weak. Oh, wait a minute. What am I actually fasting for?
So as you said, one of the focuses is on self, like personal transformation. But I want to ask you about perhaps an unusual way of thinking about personal transformation. Not so much about working on who you are, but in terms of your relationship to other people, how do you let go of, put it this way, when people say needless hate, it's really a bit of a tricky one because people don't hate people needlessly. Perhaps they overreact to the bad that's done to them. But how do you let go of the bad? When if I hate someone, which hopefully I don't, it's there's always a reason there.
Fair. Even if somebody would ask you for the reason, you'd be able to give them a whole speech on the reason, even if they wouldn't agree with you, but you can give a reason.
So it's not needless hate. It's hate with a fairly decent reason.
In your mind, yes.
So what do you do with that?
Ah, so you're asking what are the steps from a Jewish point of view of letting go or forgiving?
Yeah, I suppose justifying the idea that I should remove myself. I mean, of course you could say do it, but that's a bit childish. Don't hate. It doesn't make sense.
Well, actually, the commandment is don't hate your brother in your heart, which means either speak it out or forgive and let go, which is anyway a pretty healthy way of dealing with things. Either be assertive and speak about your needs, speak about what hurt you, or let go. But your question is more, well, how do we do that?
There has to be a process here.
Okay. So the way I see it very much is a two-step process. And the two steps are absolutely crucial because I've seen disastrous results of anybody taking either just the first step or just the second step. First step is if there's somebody who has hurt you, and let's just use like actually really hurt you, not some petty thing. Someone who really made your life miserable.
Something that on the face of things would justify hate.
Yeah, like someone was a bully to you in school for years or something. Or someone messed you up at work. Or, you know, something bad. The first thing you need to do is let out that pent-up anger. Be that in a venting session. Be that journaling. Be that in any way that you express the feeling. That's the first step. Because if you're having pent-up anger, you're not going to be able to think rationally. Anybody can come to you and say, oh, it was all for the best. It made you stronger. And they didn't mean it. And you're still seething. It's not even going to go in to one ear.
So to clarify the first point, your point, the idea that you're saying is that any sort of rationalistic or even spiritual explanation cannot be internalized if there's too much muck.
Yes, very good. Even the spiritual explanation. As a matter of fact, you see a hint to that in the Torah, where it says, do not comfort somebody when the dead is still before him. Now, in practice, that's talking about an onen that has a family member that's not yet buried, and you're not supposed to comfort them, the grief is too big. But taking it symbolically, when somebody has their dead before them, or the grief is so acute, it's not the time to comfort them. With the best intentions, it's not the time to go and say that the person's soul is happy or this is what God wanted. It's not the time. That can come later. Right now you sit and you're silent and you cry with them.
Can it come later?
So that's the thing. Step one is get over the pain in however you need to. But that is never the only step. And here's the first pitfall. Some people get stuck in step one and forever they stay as victims and forever it's, oh, do you know what happened to me back then? And forever it's venting session. That's not what I mean. I mean, step one is there to get to step two. And step two is when you have some beautiful insights that we can share, Jewish insights that help you forgive.
So just once again, you get rid of the, let's call it the baggage. You don't rid the baggage, or perhaps you lessen the load that you're carrying by externalizing it. With an einan, it's when the body has not been put away. And when the body's been buried, after time, there's what to be spoken about regarding comforting the person. You're taking it into a psychological dimension where the only time you can, quote, comfort, in which case get past and forgive, is when that baggage has been at least externalized and you can think rationally and clearly in a way that you can actually process a message that could allow you to forgive.
Beautifully said, yes. And just again, the caution here is not to get stuck in phase one. Phase two is when you take the bigger picture. And what you can see here is, I would actually suggest two things and how to see the bigger picture. One of them you learned from Joseph in the Torah, and one you just learned from modern thinking. So from Joseph in the Torah is actually the first time we have this radical idea called forgiveness. Because it's interesting, in ancient cultures, you had a being acquitted or placating somebody by groveling at their feet, showing that you're not a threat anymore. Exactly.
If you did them wrong,
you do them right instead.
You could pay them off.
Exactly. So that you appease their anger. But it's appeasement. Forgiveness is a much more holistic word. It's whoever you are and whatever you are, there is something bigger, so I forgive you. And with Joseph, we see that in the first time.
It's a moral concept.
Exactly, a moral concept, not a tick for tack concept. So after Joseph saw that his brothers really and truly are better people than when they sold him, he not only reveals himself, but he also tells them, don't be afraid, because it was God who wanted me here to save Egypt and to prepare the path for when you guys would come. So what's he doing? First of all, he sees that they're not the same people they were before. So he does see that the situation has changed. But then he puts God into the picture. So suddenly it wasn't just their evilness against him. There was a tapestry being woven as they were acting and he was acting that he can tap into and decide to be a player in that story. So the first point is injecting God, is that he knows he allowed it to happen. The person still had free will, but there was a bigger story happening as well. And the second point is a more of a modern philosophy point, and is that we never know the other person completely. The other person could have mental health issues. The other person could have had a traumatic background. The other person could have had a bad day. And once we're not so angry anymore, we're able to create a little bit of distance between them and us and our expectations towards them. And we can lower our expectations and, so to speak, put them in a box. That they did this to me. However, in their time and their space, with the tools they had, this may have been the best they could do. Now, very important, that does not condone the action. That doesn't mean that you're saying that it was okay what happened. Not at all. But you're looking at the person as a whole person. And you're saying that perhaps I can forgive the person. I might not be able to condone or even forgive the action, but I might, yes, be able to forgive the soul or the whole person, if that makes sense.
So in essence, it's interesting, you could phrase this as forgiveness without condoning.
Yeah.
So in essence, what you're saying is there's two principles or two premises that should go into a person's psychological makeup. The first idea is to clear the way. Once the way is cleared, these two premises can sit in. The first premise is the idea that there is a bigger picture at play, which gives you a certain perspective on who you are and who they are, because you're saying God's part of the picture, in which case that gives you that if there was a reason beyond this that I'm not privy to, that's a possibility. That, well, once said, again, yes, distances you from the hurt that you, yes, experienced.
And also, even without knowing the reason, the greater reason, God was witness to it. He saw it. And that also gives comfort.
Ah, I see. And both these things are, it's very emotional. I suppose being witness to it in a way has an emotional kick,
yeah,
but in essence, it's an unemotional response. It's a more rational point that such a concept exists called God, and this was allowed to happen.
Yeah.
the second point you're saying, or the second premise that can allow you to look at the other person differently, or at least forgive the person, is to recognize that they had a context, they had a situation, they had a background, they had a past, they had what brought them to that point. And with the tools they had and with what they ended up doing, I can see I'm struggling here.
I'm not going to say that they didn't have any other choice but to do that, but I can see how it would have been hard for them to act differently, or I can see how it made sense for them to act in the way they did.
And those two together would lead me to forgive them?
Yes, those two, I think, would help me distance myself from the instance, from the incident, feel strong and okay just looking at it from the outside and not feeling all angry inside it. And then looking at it and being like, listen, that behavior was unacceptable and what happened was unacceptable. And at the same time, I'm able to put that weight and throw it at God, that he knew what he was doing. Or throw that weight and put it at the unknown of their psychology.
Perhaps, can I say, you could really join the two. It's not so much...
Go ahead. I'm having a hard time joining them. So if you could help, that
so
would be...
So perhaps good. A joining of the two might be that it's the whole thing is distance. What causes you to hate a person is by you're sitting with your psyche in their psyche. You're like... Who would me being you, I would to do that? What, how,
and I would expect so much more.
In which case, if I just draw distance, both from the point, specifically from the point of view of putting myself inside the other person's psyche and recognizing that they have a psyche of their own and a package of their own, I can feel sorry, I can pity, but to hate only comes when I have an expectation they would do different. That doesn't mean from their point of view in relationship to God, they could have done different, or they should have done different. Maybe
that's between them and God.
But that's where you bring that concept of God into it.
I see. So you distance yourself by seeing their psyche as a different entity from yours. And then once you're distancing yourself, you can look at them and be like, listen, you take it up with God.
The point where they were right or wrong, or they overcame or could have overcome, that only God will know.
Yeah, only God can know that.
So if some you put people, those two principles together...
Yeah, I like that. In a way, that's another two-step process. First, you distance yourself psychologically by realizing that you're an okay person and you're fine without them. You can distance yourself by realizing that they are hurting themselves and that people that cause other people pain are in a lot more pain themselves and they're harming themselves. And you distance yourself from that. And then you look at them and you're like, listen, I have a God who loves me and who is witness to it. And that God also saw you. You take it up with that God. I don't have to be involved. And then you don't condone the action, but you can forgive the person. Because another point is that when you don't forgive, you're holding that anger with you and you become heavier every day of your life because of that person. So you keep the punishment. They keep punishing you every day you decide to keep that with you. So in a way, you could look at them and say, take it up with God. I don't want to have to suffer more because of what you did to me.
Right, but that's more of a utilitarian argument of why it's a good idea to forgive.
It's true. But also, it works with the whole God part, because this person's teshuvah between that person and God is none of my business. I can release myself from that.
So we could perhaps sum it all up by saying that the idea of God being this third component between the two of you, once I'm able to distance myself psychologically from being that person, meaning putting my psyche into them, I add the component of God into it, that allows me to forgive.
Correct. Okay. A lot to think about. We'd love to hear comments. Have a good week.
Have a lovely week.